It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
They could break here, Chelsea. This could be the moment. Frank Lampard for Chelsea. It's Carvalho to his right. Lampard for the title. Lampard! It's 2-0! It's Chelsea's championship! And 50 years of waiting have come to an end!
It's Lampard. Comes out to Essien!
Oh my goodness.
Fantastic counter attack. Here's Didier Drogba. And now get down the middle. Drogba goes!
Chelsea 2, Arsenal
0,
and Didier Drogba has...
Drogba
in the centre!
McCoy just came from behind him, went forward, that ball was that madness. Money that the ball just literally to get the ball. Stretch it,
Mitchell the money was reckless. This ball must have came from the place. If the stage ain't going to be a meeting. Me and me and my style like this guy, which guy? I don't even know what he on. Let me sip my tea, can't take me for a month. One of them jumped down back down.
Unbelievable!
Mudder.
As possibly bleak as this. Drogba!
Mudder. Never ended up in McDonald's. And I have had a trophy in long time. Not the fault that I played for the Gunners.
Hello. Welcome to Chelsea Hour. My name is Meads and I'll be your host for this one. I'm here joined today by Jerry.
Welcome to the show. Oh, good. Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to be here. I mean, Jerry sounds quite upbeat. Despite the fact we have just come off a very bad result at the hands of the Ops over there in North London. 5-0 drubbing, which is the worst result we've had against Arsenal in our history. So it seems like Mauricio Pochettino is determined to keep breaking records for the bad reasons. But that's not all we're here to talk about. We'll get onto that a little bit later on. But first, let's talk about the disappointing defeat at the hands of Man City at Wembley in the FA Cup semi-final. Strange one, Jerry. I think we're all a little bit weirded out at how we didn't actually win that game. Manchester City came off the back of a grueling 120 minutes and penalty kick loss to Real Madrid midweek. So, yeah, Chelsea, I don't know why, don't know how, but, you know, after coming across and getting across them, loads of different chances, we still conspired to lose the game. Tell me what your thoughts were. Were you confident going into that game? Because Chelsea had a full week's rest. And we've performed pretty well against City this season. So what were your thoughts going into the game?
I don't know if it's confidence, but obviously in the games we've played against Man City in recent times, we've been able to match them. So I thought, you know, with a one-off fixture, if the game followed a similar pattern to before, I thought it could go either way. I think that's sort of mentality I was going into the game with. I thought, you know, a lot of the fact that they were coming in after being knocked out of the Champions League, you know, that can go either way. They can either, you know, look to respond, or the 120 minutes could really take it out of them. You know, like, the quality is still there. But that was another point where you come into a game, think, okay, we can take advantage of this. Because, I mean, we've been pretty consistently getting deep into the cups for the past couple of years. So I thought, you know, I thought there was a chance we could get through. And to be honest, the game, it was a tight game. There wasn't much in it. And if it had gone a little bit differently, we would be in the final right now. So I think for me, where it, obviously, if we're going into the game, I think it's the individual performances that have taken up the spotlight for this game, notably Nicholas Jackson.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I agree. I think to an extent, you want to point fingers at the players, to be fair, because I think there was more than enough chances in the game for us to win it. I think, to be fair, it was actually a pretty decent performance. I thought we were quite compact. We didn't allow City to get in behind us much. And when they did, we were quick to close down the space. So I thought it was a pretty decent performance. I think, for me, one of the biggest criticisms I had with that game was that we just didn't get Cole Palmer in and around the danger zones for himself to get many chances. But I thought the general performance levels to a man was pretty damn good. I thought Nicholas Jackson, for all the crazy and bizarre decision-making in front of goal, I thought his performance in terms of with the ball, dribbling, carrying us up the pitch with a transitional threat, I thought he was pretty good. But yeah, those misses at this level, yeah, they're costly. And it goes back to the discussion at the beginning of the season where we were talking about, is Nicholas Jackson enough as just having him as your main striker? And I was very critical of Pochettino, not because I didn't think Jackson's a good player, because I still think he's a good player. And but I earmarked that, look, being dependent on a pretty much an unknown, in a sense that Nicholas Jackson, I'm not saying he's an unknown player, because you could be an unknown quantity and still be very good. But you know, in buying Nicholas Jackson, that he actually is a converted winger. So at his academy days, he played as a winger and then converted into a striker for Villarreal last season. So in your mind, you should be thinking, well, actually, this guy is still very new to the role, still very new to having the mechanics to scoring goals efficiently. He had a great run in the end of the season last season for Villarreal, where he scored, I believe, 8 in 11 games. But I'm very concerned when the club were looking at buying another striker and looking at Vlahovic, and Pochettino rejected it. It was well documented that Pochettino didn't want another striker, and I found that very, very concerning. And he pinned a lot of his hopes on the combination of Nicolas Nkunku and Nico Jackson. So I just like, I don't know. It's very, Christopher Nkunku and yeah. Nicolas Jackson. So it's just very, I think it's a bit of a gross misconduct, basically, where you've kind of set, put a guy in an unfortunate position where he's a striker that would probably have needed some support throughout the season. He would have needed some probably time of rest and time on the bench. So he's not your main nine. All the dependency isn't falling on him. And for all intents and purposes, I think he's done a pretty decent job. He's got 10 goals in his first Premier League season. Again, very new to being a striker. He's done okay in comparison to many other big-name strikers that are in the Premier League, such as Gabriel Jesus, who's only scored 4 goals. Nunez, who scored 11 goals, but he's playing for one of the better sides in the Premier League. So he's not been horrible, but I think those misses at the weekend were very, very damning. And again, showed me a player that isn't really refined in his finishing, isn't really confident in his finishing. And it was just, yeah, beggars belief that some of the opportunities that came his way, he didn't at least tuck or at least work the keeper more. So let's talk about the first chance where he slipped through on goal with a fantastic pass from Enzo Fernandez. And it's he's through on goal. He's like, no one's near him. He's through on goal. He's on his right foot. He takes it around the keeper to his left side and doesn't pull the trigger. Jerry, talk to me.
Yeah, not pretty. I think probably out of all his chances, the first one, I think it was the best one. And I think when I looked, when I saw it, the overarching thing, I was just expecting him to shoot a lot earlier than he did. And I think he had time to shape his body to hit with his right foot. I think from watching him this season, you can see he doesn't trust his left foot. So I don't even know why he went towards the left side anyway. I think there was a defender covering from the right. But listen, I think if he's high in confidence in front of goal, because I think overall he is a confident player. You can see that by the way he goes on runs and the confidence he has in his ability with the ball at his feet. Some of the stuff he was doing to the two centre backs was crazy. Kind of it got me off my feet, edge of my seat, kind of stuff.
You know what it is, yeah. I'm going to try my hardest to not overrule his performance by those misses. So let's talk, but I just want to be specific for a moment just about that first miss, because you're right, it didn't make sense him going on his left foot. He had the perfect opportunity to just go on his right, and if he wants to round the keeper that way on his right side. So him, I mean, this is what I'm talking about, just not having the real raw mechanics of a striker and that real experience in terms of, okay, I'm in this situation. I've been in this situation hundreds of times before, so I know what to do when going around the keeper. I know what to do when 1v1 with the keeper. And it just seems like he just isn't confident and decisive enough when he's through on goal. Because, yeah, that was a massive opportunity to put your team in front and pretty much be in control of the game, really. Because City at that point weren't really offering much at all. And it was just, yeah, very, very, very strange, very strange. And my mind then, you know, when I saw him go onto his left foot, my mind casted back to, I think it was against Brentford. Yeah, it was Brentford, away. And he goes around the keeper, similar fashion, on his left side, and he puts the tamest left foot finish that's going on target, but it's bobbling towards the goal, and it's then cleared. In my mind, I thought, yeah, he don't trust himself now. Because that missed, he's like, oh, okay, I'm not gonna do that again, because one, he was clowned for it, because everyone was saying it was one of the worst finishes they've seen. He should have scored. But it just seemed like he had no confidence in doing that again. He did not want to do it again. So he just turned back, and by the time he turned back, the opportunity was gone. It's just really frustrating, but at the same time, yeah. I recognize, you know, look, this guy, he isn't that guy. You know what I mean? He isn't that guy. And it's like, I don't want to be unfair to him, because I recognized him early on. Like, look, he isn't really that real killer. And shout out to Dan Soft, because Dan pointed it out earlier than anyone else. He said, look, I like Jackson. I think he's a good player, but I don't think we can rely upon him early doors. And he was right. He was very, very right. Because you could see that he likes to be in and around the width of the pitch. He likes to get involved in build up. And you have to be a super special player, like super, super special player, to have all that in your locker, your all round game be top, and then be a real stone cold finisher. You'd be one of the best players in the world. I think if Nicholas Jackson has all the tools that he has, and then adds goal scoring to his repertoire, he would be an amazing top player. And who knows if he can get there? I don't know. I'm not going to put money on him improving his finishing to the point where he is an elite finisher. But he's got the minerals, and we'll go back to what you were talking about just a moment ago, in terms of his all-round play and his ability to really, really dominate his centre-backs, because that's two games in the space of two games. So against Manchester City and then Arsenal, which we'll touch on later, he has really beat up the centre-backs, like in terms of just overall play. So yeah, Jerry, talk to me about his all-round game.
Yeah, like I was saying, he's got real confidence in his ability with the ball at his feet. And a lot of it is not instinctive. And by that, I mean, he kind of means everything he does. You can see from his body shape, he's always watching the defender. He knows to get his... I mean, he's strong, but I don't think he's sort of...
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Particularly stronger than any of the centre-backs in a direct fight that he's faced in the past two games. I think what he does is he gets there in front of them, and then he's a powerful runner, and he's got quick feet. So he baits them. Waits for them to engage, and then he knocks the ball past them and is gone. And he's not afraid to keep running. I feel like a lot of players are a bit more conservative. If they don't think it's a guaranteed counter attack, or if they don't have teammates in support, they'll hold up the ball. But he can hold it up. He can lay it off when he's on form as well. He's very difficult to stop. I think watching it from the perspective of a Chelsea fan, there is an emotional element to his performance anytime he misses one of those chances. But I think a lot of people have stood up and noticed the work he kind of does outside the box, especially after these past two games, you know, the all eyes on me fixtures, so everyone's watching. So you can see the talent is there. I think the big question in the gamble is, I guess it's the ultimate nature versus nurture, right? Is someone naturally a finisher? Can you hone that instinct? I think for me, everything I've seen so far tells me that with development, he could be a serviceable goal scorer. And this season, he's done well as a striker coming in. What's that, 10 Premier League goals? I don't know how many is in all comps.
Zero points. I want to say something just in terms of his all-round game, because I agree. I think he's an elusive player. He's elusive. I think he's, like you said, very difficult to stop. He's a player that has all the tools. I think technically he's really good with, you know, touch, really good. I think dribbling, really good. Ball carrying, really good. good in tight spaces, good under pressure, good under duress. I think one of the things that's really improved as the season's gone on is his hold up, his ability to bring others into play. It's improved endlessly. And I think even in terms of knockdowns and flick-ons, I think, again, something he's improved on massively, because I think his aerial prowess is poor. And to be honest, it still is pretty poor. We'll get onto that a little bit later on. But I think just in terms of his all-round striking play, really, really good, man. Really good. I think at times, I must admit, he does over-dribble a bit. I think he has a bit too much confidence in his ball-carrying abilities. I think he may carry it a little bit further than he needs to at times. I think he could probably lay it off a little bit sooner than he does. But generally, his ability to get you up the pitch and relieve pressure is really, really, really good. I mean, there was a point in the second half where he absolutely blew Walker out of the water, burnt him. And that's one thing that in the group chat, funny enough, we're talking about. I was saying, we need to bring on Mudryk because he's got speed and I think he could trouble Walker. And Ash was saying, no one's going to outrun Walker. And I said, I think Mudryk is probably the fastest player in the league. So I think Mudryk will get away from him, no problem. And he said, nobody is bursting Walker. Lo and behold, Nicholas Jackson absolutely tore him. And then he got pushed in the back, which I thought was a penalty, but here we are. But just in terms of performance, I think you're right. Jackson has a lot of tools. And I don't know, striking-wise, goal-scoring-wise, it remains to be seen for me if he can actually really translate that into goal-scoring feats. But I think he's got a lot of minerals and a lot of quality for me to completely rub him out as a player. I would love to see him on a wide left inside forward position with another striker, like a Gokeres. I would love to see it, because or even a Sesko, because I think those guys are shooters and it takes away the real pressure of us being reliant or needing to be reliant on a Nicholas Jackson. I think that would be a really good pairing, because Nicholas Jackson, for me, I think if you get him on a pitch and you can add a couple of goals here and there to the 10s and the 13s to 15s, I think that's a good dangerous number and a dangerous attack, really, if you add him, Cole Palmer, and then a shooter. But yeah, I think you're right. Performance-wise, it was good. I don't want to let the misses kind of, distract me from, the performance. But yeah, and then we'll go on to the second miss. Again, slip through. Good play, good build-up. And then the shot that Edison easily saves, it's just, again, goes back to the point of just not really having that conviction in his ball striking. I mean, me and Jermaine talk about you wanting a striker to just clark the ball, like really slap it. And Jackson just doesn't seem to have that in him. It's insane. It's really insane. But yeah. So what makes you think that he potentially has the quality to be, like you said, serviceable in terms of goal scoring?
Well, I think he 10 goals in his first season in the Premier League, in a very unstable environment. I think we have improved a lot recently in terms of going forward and, scoring goals. I think if he is, I wouldn't quite call him a streaky scorer, but he doesn't tend to go on massive goal droughts. He kind of scores in pockets. He'll get a goal with 3 and 5 and then won't score for 3 games. And then, you get 2 and 4. It's kind of like that kind of scorer. Not necessarily Costa, who would score all of his goals in the first half of the season. Towards the end, towards the last 10 games, he kind of be quiet. I think he won't go through like a 15-game goal drought. In terms of him being the main striker, I think you can manage it if there's others around him. So if Cole Palmer carries on at this rate and then we can get someone else with a similar output on the other side, I think it's fine. But I think with development, he can definitely be a 10 to 15 goal a season striker in the Premier League. The problem with that is you kind of have to stick all to this because he's not going to get that playing a bit part role. And he does seem like a player who benefits from, you know, game time and being able to get in his stride. And, you know, the confidence that gives him. So if you're happy with 10 to 15 goals, then I think you can invest in him, and anything he gets over that is a bonus. But on a consistent basis, he strikes me as that kind of player, you know. He has got a lot of chances this season, especially thinking back to the early part of the season. Or if you think he's not good enough and the makeup of that attack means we need another striker in there who, you know, we can count on for goals, then I think that's where maybe his ability to play on the wing is sort of benefit for him. Similar to what Werner did, he would play up front. But he could also play on the left wing. And I think if we got a striker in and that was the case, you're looking at five or six attackers for those three spots. And, you know, game time does get a bit scarce. So I think this season has been a big sample size. You know, he's played pretty consistently to judge him. And every time I'm about to sell my stocks in Jackson, he does something else. You got to take the rough for the smooth, Jackson.
I agree.
I guess for me, what you were saying before about, you know, putting a shooter beside him. For me, like, I'm thinking now, and I'll pose this question to you. What do we need more? Do we need another shooter, or do we need another creator?
Easy shooter.
See, Palmer is the main, like, okay, we know guaranteed he'll be there, right?
That's an easy question for me. Another shooter, 100%. Because, look, even with Cole Palmer's goals this season, yeah, and Cole Palmer's been fantastic. But I'll tell you for free, Cole Palmer doesn't necessarily need to be the fulcrum in terms of your goal-scoring prowess. Yeah, Cole Palmer's an amazing finisher, extremely clinical, but you need a driller in there. And I think if you get a driller in there, it not only frees up more space for Jackson, it not only frees up more space for Palmer, but it takes the brunt off of both of them in terms of needing to score goals. If you get a killer in there, I think we create more chances. If you get a killer in there, I think we score way more goals. If you get a killer in there, I think you get an uptick in both Jackson and Palmer's numbers. And I think, especially in terms of assists, clinical finishing, or relatively clinical finishes in comparison to Jackson, I think you're going to get an uptick in productivity numbers-wise from those players. Because I think Jackson is good at providing for others. I think... even Palmer, extremely good for providing for others. And it's almost like you said, where you say, if you get another attacker, another striker, whatever, then yeah, potentially you're going to impact game time of other players. Yes and no, because Poch isn't, for me anyway, from my perspective, he isn't one to really rotate the attack too much, unless he's trying to he does stupid decisions like he's done in recent times. But yeah, he tries to stick with a stable attack, which I don't mind, actually. I like it. So you'd have to make a decision about the other players. So whether that's selling Madueke, selling Mudryk, selling Sterling, content with that, to be honest. So I wouldn't mind that. If as long as you're decisive as a manager and make those decisions, it's fine by me. But I definitely think you get a shooter in there, 1,000,000%. That is, like, for me, non-negotiable. And that's not because I don't think Jackson's a good player. I need to be clear. Jackson's a very good player, and I think he could be a very, very dangerous player for our team. But I don't want the entire burden of goal scoring to fall on him, because that is where you inevitably will fail in terms of your goal scoring capacity, basically.
Yeah. Okay. I think I lean more onto the shooter side of it, but I am thinking back to a few games where we have faced deep blocks and struggled. I think sometimes we start well and then teams sort of get into the game a little bit more, and then we struggle to impose our will on the game. So I think maybe if in the front three we have that, you know, shooter, and then a bit further back we have a more creative element to our midfield when we play those games. I think there's definitely, outside of Palmer, there's definitely Chukwuemeka there who can sort of be that creative influence from the midfield. But I do think, regardless of what happens, we do need more creative players. Players that, I mean, if you just look at Odegaard's performance at the Emirates against us, it wasn't just about, you know, a confident player who was having a good game. It was just everything he did was just pure creativity. So he would, the way he manipulates the ball to give himself more time until it's just the perfect time to hit that pass. The way he's aware of everyone around him, and that's obviously the mental side, but he's got the quality and the consistency in his actions to execute what he's got in his mind. And I think we don't have enough players who have it going on up there in terms of their appreciation of the game, appreciation of space, appreciation of time as well. Because one particular instance comes back to me where Odegaard was at the edge of the box and someone's running through, but he could have played them, but he's done a little drag or moved the ball, manipulated the ball in a way, and then slid the person through right as they're going past the defender. So you've got no chance as a defender. And I think, we need a shooter. We need someone who can finish the chances that we make. But I feel like a lot of the chances that we do make is Palmer and Gusto doing something. And if they can't do it, then we haven't got anyone else. And I think, we've really seen that.
From my perspective, and I think, so I agree in terms of Odegaard. I think Odegaard is a very, very special player. But I wouldn't say that we don't have players that can do the deedful in that respect. I think if you look at the way that we're set up and the way that Arsenal are set up, you see polar opposites in terms of the way where and the manner in which players receive the ball. So Odegaard, for example, yesterday, he received the ball, was it yesterday? Or was it the day before yesterday? Tuesday. He received the ball in extremely good areas, whether it's central or whether it's in the pocket, whether it's relatively out wide. He's able to receive the ball and then have players nearby to utilize either their runs or utilize them in terms of combination play. So he pass it off them. He's able to move. He's able to shape. He's able to feint. He's able to get out. He's able to utilize their movements to be a real danger. There were so many reverse passes that he was making because of the movements of his players. So Havertz played that beautiful run across Badia Shield. Who found him? Odegaard, off the blind side of everybody. Like, was cutting us apart. And like you said, it was a real magnificent performance from Odegaard. But then it also, I look back and I look at our team and I think, I go back to the Liverpool game earlier in the season at Stamford Bridge, where Enzo Fernandez pretty much put on a clinic against Liverpool. He was excellent in multiple ways, doing a relatively similar job to what Odegaard did. I think obviously in different degrees of quality. I think Odegaard was far more incisive in his passing, but I think a lot of the instances in that Liverpool game where Enzo was a creative fulcrum for our team at that point. And obviously, Cole Palmer wasn't there at that point. So maybe the Cole Palmer influence has had an impact on Enzo's creativity or creative influence in the team. But I also think positioning and Enzo's position and instructions from the manager in terms of where Enzo's played of late has had an impact on Enzo's creative tendencies. But that being said, I don't know, and I'm trying to gauge whether Enzo is an offensive playmaker, because that's how I see Odegaard. Odegaard's 1,000,000% an offensive, wholehearted playmaker. And I feel like for me, Enzo might be a deeper type of playmaker rather than an offensive one. So again, given how he's been utilized this season, it's very difficult for me to write off his overall playmaking qualities, but it's just not been good. And I guess we could speak about individual performances like Enzo Fernandez and Caicedo before we move on to the Arsenal game. But Enzo and Caicedo against Manchester City, it was an interesting one. Well, how do you think they did? Especially Caicedo. How do you think Caicedo did in
semi-final? So it's funny, I was watching the game back and my overriding thought was this guy is cooked. Physically, he's cooked. If you go back to, I think if you go back to 19 minutes in the game and let it run forward to I think 20... If I remember correctly, I think Caicedo played pretty well. Maybe I'm remembering the wrong game, but if I remember correctly, that was one of his better performances recently. I do think the balance between those two, it just doesn't look quite right. I think you've got Enzo and Gallagher, you know... I don't think the relationships between those three have developed as well as we thought. I think there's something missing there with the balance. It's interesting. Obviously, the question's been asked recently, do we go with one or the other? And obviously, Enzo's had surgery now, so... we're not going to see him again this season. So I think, do you go with one or the other? I think we've seen Enzo further forward. So going back to the whole Palmer-Enzo thing with creativity, I think he probably does his best work a little bit deeper. Some of the balls he played in the Man City game to Jackson. You kind of want him as your maybe deepest playmaker. And you can make use of the range of his passing. I think... in and around the edge of the box, that's just Palmer's area. That's where he can operate. And obviously, going back to what I said before, like if you want another creator, I think we have obviously Enzo who can do that in the deep areas of the pitch. But I do think we need another one in and around the box, because if you as a defense can, you know, eliminate Palmer, then that does a lot to minimize our attacking threat. So yeah, Enzo. Caicedo, I don't really think he knows what he is in this Chelsea team, because he has obviously the massive spaces to cover, and so, you know, you think he's that destroyer, but he's not really getting there with his challenges. It's almost like he stopped trying to get the ball, and is just happy to foul the player. I think he uses his body, you know. I feel like Kante would either win the ball cleanly or win the ball and then use his body to protect it or to, you know, ease you out of the way. I feel like Caicedo wants to ease you out of the way first with his body and then go after the ball. I don't think he's been a particularly good tackler, to be honest. And, you know, I think arriving at those challenges with such a big area to cover, there's definitely an element of tiredness there. He hasn't really moved me this season, to be honest. Caicedo. I think there's definitely things you can do to improve that, and you know, get him playing a bit more in his bag. But yeah, as far as I can remember, one of the better games for Caicedo. I may be wrong.
Yeah, I think from my perspective anyway, I thought Caicedo and Enzo against, especially Enzo, I thought Enzo was really, really decent in the first half, especially. I thought it was really good against Man City. I thought he was making decisive passes. He was getting about the pitch. But I think after about 30, 35 minutes, he just looked very uncomfortable. He wasn't doing what he was doing in the first 30 minutes. He wasn't being mobile enough. I think he just looked all out of sorts. And I mean, given that he's had this hernia issue for quite some time, and we've been playing him through it every game, to be honest, I don't think he's missed a game. I think he might have missed one game with this hernia problem. It's a shame that it's gotten to this point where I think he's just a detriment to the team. Because I think after the first half, I was just calling for Enzo to come off. I felt that City were there for the taking, and we having Enzo on the pitch just became just unproductive and not helpful, because he wasn't moving about. He was leaving Caicedo overexposed again. And I speak about this all the time, and I completely agree in terms of the balance of the team. The balance of the team has been off for a very, very long time. I've said for the longest time, I don't like our midfield. I like our midfield individually. I like Conor Gallagher individually. I like Enzo Fernandez individually. I like Caicedo individually. But the construction and the composition and the utilization of our midfield, I do not like. I don't like the balance. I don't like how we play. I don't like how we build up. I don't like how we defend transitions. I don't like how we defend it against just combination plays. I don't like how we play in midfield. I don't like it. I don't like the structure. I do not like the structure. And I'm viewing it and thinking, well, it's not the players, because I think the players individually are really good. Then I look at, okay, what are the instructions? I'm trying to gauge the instructions. And whenever if we just look at build up, it looks like we build up in a 4-3-2-3 system where Caicedo drops the deepest to receive the ball, and then he's the one to pass out. Usually passes it out wide because the midfield options are too far ahead of him for him to make those passes. And that has rung true throughout the entire season. Players not close enough to one another, massive, massive chasms of space between you and your midfield partner. As a result, your passing options are limited. As a result, you can get pressed to death because you've got no one around you to pass and combine with. And then invariably mistakes are made. Now, people look at this and think, oh, this player's crap. You look at Caicedo losing the ball in those spaces, those areas, and think, gosh, you're shit. Like, because why are you losing the ball? But if you played football to a decent enough level, you'd know that time and space is your friend, right? And if you don't get any time and space, it could become, and you're not super adept with the ball, right? And super press resistant. At Caicedo, I think for me personally, I think he is somewhat press resistant and pretty decent in terms of his resistance to pressure. But if you have zero options 99% of the time on a pitch, you are going to lose the ball more often than not. And he's done a pretty decent job in that respect because his passing accuracy is pretty decent. His ball losses are pretty decent. But when you at this level, if you make a mistake, invariably it can get punished. I think Caicedo has had a very difficult job this season because just the midfield composition has just not done him any favours whatsoever. It's just been a complete shit show. So I'm happy, for one, that Enzo's finally got this hernia operation, because we can get to see the team without him, and I get to see Conor Gallagher hopefully back in a deeper position where he's not playing as a 10, because again, playing Conor Gallagher as a 10, it gives me a headache. I don't understand the thinking. Actually, I lie. I understand the thinking because, okay, Conor Gallagher is a super amazing presser of the football. But you can have him deeper and do that. Why does he have to be that high up to do that? Because you as a manager don't know how to coach a team to actually break down defences, so you have to force them to counter-press to create chances. That's basically what it is. And it's a horrible strategy, a horrible structure. And that's why against Manchester City, you can kind of get some joy with it, because City, no matter who they play, they like to be the dominant one. They like to be the domineering, the aggressor, and control the football. So when you press up on against them and win the ball back, you get some joy, you're able to transition. And that's where Chelsea got joy at the weekend. But as we move on to the Arsenal game, you'll see why it doesn't quite work when teams nullify your coach's real only philosophy and strategy into winning or trying to create something or create dangerous moments for the opponent. Now, after the performance against Manchester City, where I think we could all agree that actually, you know what, Chelsea held themselves accountable. They were pretty accountable. It was an accountable performance. It was pretty decent. Should have won the game. Had enough chances to win the game. Didn't win the game. But fine, it's a semi-final against Man City. You can lose those games. And then all in the build-up towards the Arsenal match, people were talking about, oh, you know, Chelsea turn up in big games, so, you know, Arsenal shouldn't get too complacent, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just thinking, listen, Arsenal, when we played them in the first game, we were really good. I think the first 60 minutes, we were excellent. However, one thing about Arsenal, one thing about us, is that when it comes to adaptation and adjusting in matches, Arsenal can tweak. Arsenal can bend a bit. They can flex a bit. Whereas whenever something goes awry for us, we freeze. And my biggest concern was that if Arsenal get an early goal, it's curtains. I thought, if Arsenal get an early goal, it's curtains. If Chelsea score first, maybe there's a chance of us doing something. But if Arsenal get an early goal, it's curtains. Lo and behold, we concede an early goal. Trossard. But let me scale it back a bit. When you saw that lineup, Jerry, what were your thoughts? Because when I saw it, I actually felt sick. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
I was confused. I thought it was kind of like a lineup that said we didn't have anything to play for and we just wanted to rest some guys. I don't know if Potcher's been asked about the centre back thing. I don't know what he said about that, but yeah. I mean, changing both your centre backs game to game is never a good idea. I think in terms of outside of that, it was pretty standard for how things have gone recently with Gallagher, Enzo, Caicedo. I think Madueke has done really well to get himself in the team in recent weeks. And I think he definitely should have been used more. Throughout the season, his season has kind of been a rags to riches story almost, because he started off the season, I think had some off the pitch issues with Pochettino, and so didn't really feature at all till I think we're about maybe a third of the way through the season. Jackson, Mudryk, I think Mudryk has gotten a nod over Sterling in recent times. So I think it was a outside of defence, it was a pretty standard team. But yeah, Gilchrist, Disasi, Badiashile, Cucurella. I mean, Badiashile, I don't know what is going on with that guy. That was an insane.
We will get on to him. We'll get on to him. But let me just share my thoughts on when I saw that defense. Now, like you just said, changing your defense is not the wisest thing to do, especially so frequently, is not the wisest thing to do. And Chelsea's defensive record this season has been a complete, complete shit show. The most goals conceded we've ever had in our Premier League history. So that goes to show you that even when Chelsea were at their worst, or quote unquote shit back in the day, we never conceded this many goals in a Premier League season. 1995, I believe we conceded 55 Premier League goals, 56 Premier League goals. We've already beaten that. And we've still got 6 Premier League games to play. So when I saw Gilchrist at right back, De Sassi back in, Badiashile, I was like, what? What? Like, how? It's one thing changing a couple of players. I mean, it's one thing changing one or two, but to change 3 out of 4 of your back line and against Arsenal, one of the best teams in the league, what are you thinking? Like, you're sending people out there to die. You're sending Gilchrist out there to die. What are you doing? Now, maybe I'm confused, but Trevor Chalobah did a really good job against Manchester City. I thought it was really good. Thiago Silva against Manchester City did a good job. I thought he was good. So those two didn't have to rest. These men haven't played in weeks. But Thiago Silva has barely played over the last 2 months. Chalobah has barely played. He's been back for a couple of weeks. He's not even been in back-to-back games. So I'm just like very confused at decision-making. And yes, Gusto had a minor injury. So fine, don't play him. But why would you play Gilchrist? You could just play Chalobah right back. It beggars belief. It goes beyond comprehension. And if you're still fighting, the worst thing is you're trying to fight for Europe, apparently. But you're sending out a defence that has looked a mess. Badiashile and Disasi together have looked a complete mess this season. So what are you thinking? It's just incredible. The decision-making of Pochettino this season has been so criminal. It just goes beyond my wildest dreams. I never thought he'd be this tactically inept. I mean, I'm lying. I did. But just seeing it in the flesh with my team is incredible to actually witness. And, it was a Mullerin. I think if you look at Gilchrist for the first goal, he did not have a Scooby-Doo. Did not have a Scooby. Did not know what to do. Did not know how to engage Trossard. Great play from Declan Rice. Driving up the pitch. That's what I think he does best. As that defensive box-to-box, driving up the pitch, and then slips in Trossard, who I think is a very, very dangerous finisher, really good player. Really, really good player. But crashes it near post, and Petrovic, once again, with a horrible mistake. Just terrible, terrible mistake. And you're just looking at that. It was an early goal, and I'm just thinking, already, what a mess. What a mess. Oh. And I just, even before the goal, I just felt like Arsenal just kept getting in pretty easily. We just didn't have a Scooby-Doo. Badiashile, just a complete shit show. I think ever since he's come back from his injury, he has been diabolical. Diabolical. And when things are so messy at the club, or where things are so messy at the club, I struggle to kind of gauge, is it Badiashile? Like, is he that rubbish now? Or is the environment not working for him? Is Pochettino, does he not like Pochettino? What's the issue with Badiashile? I think you need to determine, you need to get a certain level of expectation of a player, and you expect a little bit more from Badiashile in terms of quality, but it's just been bad.
For me, I think it is. I think it's a combination of a few things. I think he's come back from injury, and he's been out for a long time. I think it was something like 6 months or something like that.
Yeah, it was after a while.
And then he's come back and he's not played consistently at all. So he, as a centre back, he's in and out of the squad. He probably doesn't have a feel for the game as well. I think a lot of the mistakes he's making are he's just losing his feet, or losing the ball under his feet, or shooting under his feet before the cross comes in. It seems like his legs aren't connected to his brain anymore.
Bro, it is mental. And Badiashil, pre-injury, right? So comfy on the ball. So balls will get fizzed into him. Takes it down, calm, no problem. It gets wrapped into him, no problem. Touch, release, touch, release. He was so smooth on the ball. And I remember people saying, oh, yeah, he's better than Kowo on the ball. Because that's how good he was on the ball. When he was receiving it, tight areas, under duress, touch, ping. Touch, pass, touch through the lines. But now it is catastrophic. Like you said, his feet all over the place. All over the place. He's like a second or two slower to react in terms of, oh, someone's coming across me, that's danger. Or I'm just about to pass this ball. But it's like his like you said, his brain is not connected to his body. So he's like getting his feet all up in a mess when passing the ball. It is insane. I genuinely can't believe how bad he has been this season. But you're right. Let's not forget, he has just come back from injury. He hasn't had rhythm in the game. So he may not have a feel for the game, like you said, but it's been bad, man. It's been bad. Oh, I shudder at the thought, bro. I shudder.
Yeah. I also think, you know, he's come back into a team who are now conceding goals as well, so that doesn't help. Yeah, it's tough.
Disasi, talk to me, bro.
Disasi, that guy. Do you know what's funny? I usually watch matches with one of my boys who lives near me, and he's an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
And every time Chelsea play, he'll text me, bro, this Disasi guy is not good. Like, almost every single time. And the thing is, like, when he can see you and he's touch tight, I think he's decent. Fine. Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah. That's his bag, bro. That's his bag.
But anything that's not a tussle, it's
horrible.
It's nasty. I think he's a decent player. I don't think he's I don't think he's holding us back. I think he's just a steady Eddie. Good availability as well. But I just want to say I knew it.
The way that our fans talk about him, like I think it's like a mixed bag, right? So I think some of them are just like over him because they don't think he's good enough, and that's fine. I don't even really have too much of an issue with that. I think if you think about it, cool. He bought him for £40 million, a lot of money for a squad player. But if you think about the availability that he's had. Imagine if we had a season without Chalobah, we didn't buy Disasi. It would have looked a lot worse, to be honest. He's not good in terms of, from my perspective anyway, I might be going early here, but from my perspective, I don't think he's good. I spotted that pretty early on in the season. I didn't like what I was seeing. I think he made a disastrous start against Liverpool. I remember it's just terrible mistakes, but scored, but defensively, I just was not having him. But he's been available. And that's one thing that I could, say is a positive with the signing. I don't think it's been a net negative because he's been available whilst we've had loads of injuries. But my God, quality-wise, at least under Pochettino, because I think you need to say that with a caveat because it is Pochettino. So at least under Pochettino, my God, the performances has just been really, really poor. Really poor, man. Oh, bad. Again, bad. But is it him as a player or is it the setup? It's difficult to gauge. It's difficult to gauge. Because, again, these men are defending a lot of space. A lot of space. Not a compact unit whatsoever. So the defence is getting breached often. So is it really them as players? I think I always say this. Your manager really needs to mask a defender's or mask your squad's weaknesses, right? A great defender is able to put a side together where even where they're weak, they're relatively solid because you're able to cover the deficiencies. And I just feel like Poch puts the teams together with vibes. Like, you know what? Fuck it, man. You may not be a good 1v1 defender. We're going to put you in 1v1 situations. Fuck it. Like, fuck it. Handle it. Fuck it. Here's what it is. We'll go machine for machine with a team and we'll see who comes out on top. And if we lose, that's football. That's his mentality. His mentality isn't about, all right, well, Disasi, you're not good in wide areas. So we're gonna set up in a way where we don't expose you too much to go out wide. We're going to be relatively compact so that we stifle wingers out wide. We stifle strikers moving out wide. We create a box. We create a trio so that we can actually contain space. We can contain players. No thought about that at all. So I just say this as a caveat because I've seen players, world-class players like Antonio Rudiger, go from a horrible setup under Frank Lampard where he's making mistakes every game under Frank Lampard. But then go to an elite coach like Thomas Tuchel and be and still maintain best in the world level performances. So I'm trying to be very cautious here in writing off Disasi, save a bad issue, because I'm watching the structure of the team and I know how difficult it must be to defend in this team. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or I'm bugging and these men are just terrible. I could be completely wrong.
They can't all be terrible.
There we go. Can't all be terrible. But back to the Arsenal game, we got taken apart. We got taken apart, man. We the first half, Chelsea had decent opportunities, I guess, angles to get chance. I think Disasi had a glorious chance from a corner. Again, I think he just rubbish at attacking the ball. Should have scored. Good cross from Mudryk. We had openings. I mean, Jackson, again, went on these amazing runs. We had a couple of openings. But, yeah, I felt, I wouldn't say we were coming back into the game. I think Arsenal, again, let Chelsea have the ball because they felt that Chelsea can't do nothing if you give them the ball, especially if there's no Cole Palmer. So they were very confident in just like, all right, sure, best work, basically. You guys struggle to break down deep, like low blocks. All right, we'll sit back and we'll just let you lot have the ball for a little bit, and we'll punch you up once we get it back. And once they got it back, they were punching us up. It was incredible. Declan Rice was breaking up play. Thomas Partey breaking up play. Even Martin Ødegaard recovering the ball. Saka recovering the ball, and they were just beating us up. Kai Havertz had Badiashil in a daze. Movement. Fantastic. Physically, couldn't really deal with him. It was just embarrassing. Really, it was just embarrassing all over the pitch. I thought Caicedo was all right. I wouldn't say he was great. I wouldn't say he was bad. He was all right. He looked really tired, though. Really, really, really tired. Because he's just been playing every single game. Every single game. Enzo Fernandez. We've already talked about him, but he was a disaster. Yes, I understand he's been playing with his hernia issue. Bro, get a fucking surgery. I know today he's been announced he's finally got the surgery. Thank fuck. But my God, horrible. horrible. And again, it goes back to the point of Man City, second half. Take him off. He offered nothing. Absolutely nothing. From a defensive standpoint, nothing. From an offensive standpoint, nothing. From a standard midfielder standpoint, with utilization of the ball, nothing. It was a shambles. And I can imagine he was probably super discomforted by the hernia situation. But bro, why are you doing hero? We are 11th or 9th or wherever we are. Go get that surgery, bro. Because you look terrible. You look terrible. What's the point? What's the point? And then I'm just looking at the manager. And I'm like, bro, why are you still playing this guy? He's clearly got an issue. Why are you still playing him? It's mad. And so Enzo was bad. Caicedo was okay, you know. But when you're losing 5-0, Caicedo put in effort. Let's just say that. Let's say Caicedo put in effort. Gallagher, rubbish. I thought it was terrible, terrible. Jackson, again, good all-round play. Horrible in front of goal. There was a header that he should have headed in the goal. Put his arm up. He deleted Gabriel. Slapped it against the side netting. Bad. Mudrick. Little flashes in the first 5 minutes. Ghost. Rest of the game. Terrible. Madueke. Couple of jinky majinkies. Terrible. But that being said, Madueke created openness for us. You know, he created some openness, but terrible. Terrible. Just everything about that performance was horrible. And I go back to just the way that we play, the structure, the way how we're so open, the way that teams can carve us apart, the way that I can literally envision, I can close my eyes right now, envision all teams we play and how easily they breach our defense, how easily they breach our midfield, how easily they're able to create dangerous opportunities. Like, it's not even just the Arsenal game. I've seen that same match so many times. It's just that other teams haven't been good enough to really punish us. And when they have punished us, we've also lost. You know, we also lose the game. So that Arsenal result was coming. It was coming. Like, people say that we've improved. I don't agree. Results have improved. Yes, but we have gotten worse. We have gotten worse. Progressively worse. And if it wasn't for Cole Palmer, who has been saving our ass every single game, we would be in deep trouble. Deep, deep trouble. The performances haven't been great. Even against Everton, and I've said this before, against Everton, we weren't fantastic, as people said. Cole Palmer's excellence took the game away from Everton, and then everyone's able to play a little bit calmer. But Everton was still creating openings. But this is what I'm trying to explain. I try and judge a game in totality. I don't try and pull the wool over anybody's eyes. And I don't try and bullshit. If I think something is bad, I'm not saying it just because I want to talk. I'm saying it because I think it's bad. And the Everton match just rings in my mind because, yeah, we won 6-0, I believe it was. But, bro, just the amount of openings that they had. And the amount of openers every team have against us when we're again machine for machine is a complete madness. And if Poch is to stay here, God forbid, but if he is to stay, he needs to address that because that will continue next season. If that's your play, your style, your ideology, then we are fucked, bro. We are fucked. Absolutely fucked. Oh, what have you thought of Pochettino's time here? And do you have sympathy for him? Where do you stand on it? Because a lot of people have sympathy for him in terms of the injuries and stuff. And to an extent, I do. I think the injuries have hurt us because you lose quality like Reece James, like Nkunku, like Lavia. That's quality lost, right? Is that enough of an excuse? What are your thoughts?
I think he had the best start I think he could possibly have in terms of he was announced before, I think it was before the end of last season. He had the time to come and, you know, assess the squad, have an input into what we needed in the summer. And, you know, I think the full preseason, being able to work with most of the players that we signed, or most of the players in the squad. So he had a lot of things, you know, his predecessor didn't have. And I think as we stand here with, what, six games to go in the season, I think I've seen a big enough sample size to make an initial judgment on him as a Chelsea manager. And I think over the past couple of weeks, a lot of stuff has been, you know, a lot of tweets and a lot of articles have been resurfacing from his time at PSG. And it just seems like that more of the same here. He doesn't really, you know, fill me with any confidence that we can really achieve anything. I think what we look like as a team under him can definitely improve. And I think for me, I would see, you know, top four, sort of challenging for top four as his, the best version of a squad under him. I think in the modern game, where even teams who play a more direct brand of football, they're so well coached nowadays. And I feel like what he's asking his players to do, I don't feel like they're capable. And when I say I don't think they're capable, I think the standard that will get us where the fans expect us to be, I don't think they can do it. And what I see when I see our team is, it's all about the moments. When you get the ball in our system, the direction of play depends entirely on what you decide to do next. There's I think minimal repetitions, and that can have its benefits. But I think when you see Caicedo losing the ball very often, or Badia Shiel passing the ball out, I think in our system as a defender, you have a lot of the ball, you have a lot of time, but the only thing you don't have is options. And so every time you get the ball, you're having to make a different decision about where you're going to play, who you're going to play it to. Are you going to pick up the pace of the game and try and get the ball through the lines? Are you going to, you know, keep the ball rotating? And I think a lot of that stuff, 80% of the time, our defenders, you know, just sort it out and it's fine. But that 20% of the time in the Premier League, you get punished an awful lot of times. And I think where we have young players, and he's talked about, you know, these guys lacking experience, I think for me, I've never really liked experience. I think it's a crutch. I think it's an excuse that a lot of people mm-hmm. use. I think experience, you know, obviously as human beings, as you get better, so as you do something more often, you do get better at it. But listen, just because I played the piano for 50 years, it doesn't mean I'm going to turn into a great pianist. I think there has to be an element of natural talent. Mm-hmm. I think when you get into the Premier League, some of these players, some of these young players, they have such a talent, such a bank of talent that they can call on, that experience doesn't matter, because in whatever situation they're getting into, they have so much talent that they're making the right decision because they're making the right decision. It's not because they've made the wrong decision over 10 years and so now they know what the right decision is. And that's where I see a problem, and as well with Pochettino, the excuses. I've never heard him talk about a tactical setup. I think it reminds me of football back in the previous era of the Premier League, where when the tactics are a little bit looser and every team is a bit less rigid, I think that the players have such a big impact to play. And it reminds me of that scene in, you know, the movie Goal. Was it Santiago Muniz? or something like that, or Santiago, whatever. Basically, there was that scene where he tells him to run to the goal, and he kicks the ball, and it's sort of that lessons teach him that you can never be faster than the ball, so you have to release it. And I feel like it's similar here. Like, you can run as hard and as fast as you want. If the team you're playing are prepared and technically on point, you're not getting the ball. And I think within the confines of a Premier League game, I think you trying to solve problems on the pitch is always going to be slower than someone who's prepared something and already knows what to expect. So that's where I disagree with. And even Gallagher said it. He said it in the post match against Arsenal. He said we're trying hard. Well, it's not that we're not trying. And I think I don't have to remind everyone what that player cam looks like. With Tielemans, it's tough out there. And if you're having to, as someone, you don't have maybe the biggest bank of talent to draw on. You don't have the biggest bank of experience to draw on either. And the coach is asking you to play in this environment. I think it is difficult. And I think whilst they haven't done themselves justice in a lot of these situations, I think there is an element of, okay, we saw how they struggled with it and it doesn't seem like they've gotten better at it. So are we just going to sit here as a team and wait for them to bed in and spend that time? We're not working towards any particular tactical plan. I think
with
the tactical plan, at least you've got something to hold on to, because you can see that they're doing something, they're just not doing it well, but at least they're doing something. So we just have to wait until they get it. This is waiting for the players to, it feels like he expects the players to mature and then all of a sudden be able to make the best of it on the pitch. And I feel like that's a lot longer process than, you know, working towards a particular tactical plan.
Yeah, it's like, I just, it's so sad, basically, because I just look at him and I think, bro, what are you actually trying to do with these guys? And like, I'm not saying that you should be the super tactician. And I mean, we've had a super tactical guy before. But bro, I just look at things. I'm like, bro, it doesn't need to be this way. Like you just look at what we do. You look at the players and I just think to myself, like, it doesn't need to be this way. It doesn't need to be this difficult. Our players don't need to be struggling in this respect. It just doesn't need to be this way. And I feel like, again, like you said, the excuse culture is wild, you know? The excuse culture is absolutely wild. And he doesn't know how to take accountability for his behaviours. I don't think he knows how to take accountability at all. The excuses are very similar and reminiscent to Frank Lampard when he was here. So it's just bizarre. Very bizarre. And the fact that he's even in contention to stay for another season, I think is gross from the owners. Gross. It's like you're refusing to admit that actually we've made a big mistake here. And unfortunately, us as fans are going to have to suffer through this rubbish because it's just, I don't know what to say, man. I'm struggling for words because it's so poor. It's so, so poor. But yeah, let's go on to some listeners' questions. But yeah, in summary, Chelsea were well beaten against Arsenal by a very good side. And quite evidently, Chelsea are not a good footballing team. Complete mess. So some listeners' questions here before we wrap up. What is the balance between your young, you need to develop, you need time to develop, and you're not just of the level? So that's from Alexis Kafkas, friend of the show. I think he's asking, so what is the balance between a player that's young, you need to let them have time to develop, and, well, bro, you're actually just not a good player. You're not good. Like, where do you think that balance and that line is?
I think for me, I'm more on the you're not if you're good enough, you're good enough. I think for me, when I watch a young player, what I'm looking for is, you know, the fundamentals of the game. Because I think some of the best players in the world, they just do the simple things very well. And for me, what's become more and more important is decision making. I think in the Premier League, with such tight margins now, I think it's such an important attribute. And the thing is, we've seen lots of players with extreme talent, but they're not able to, you know, use that talent the way we think. And I think that's why I sort of lean on the side of it. If you've got it, you've got it. And, you know, when you see a young player with real talent, you know immediately what it looks like. You don't have to make any excuses for them.
Yeah.
Because I think the element, the rate of development, obviously it differs from person to person, but I think we have to concede that there are so few examples of players who make drastic changes from what we see. And even those drastic changes, there are even fewer who are able to maintain it for more than one season. I think that listen, talent is undeniable.
I don't disagree. I think for me, I think with certain players of a certain level, you see straight away that, yeah, this guy's it. You see it straight away that this guy's it. Now, those players can be, yeah, they can have bad games, they can have bad form, but I think there's a baseline level where you see them and think, yep, you are actually it. You get it. But again, some people take time to bed in, some people take time to adjust, and I agree with that, that might be the case. But I still feel that I should be able to see a certain level of quality from you and think, yeah, you know what, you've got it, you've got the good stuff. So, yeah, Alexis, I hope that answers your question. New gaffers, if Poch gets the boot, who would you guys want as coach? I think let's just keep this short and snappy, Jerry. I would want Thomas Tuchel. If he's open to coming back home, I'd jump at the chance of getting Tuchel back. I think it sends out a statement in multiple ways, which I've already talked about on the timeline. So yeah, that would be it for me. Tuchel or Amorim. Jerry?
Yeah, I think out of, you know, the names sort of going around, I think those are the two I'd probably lean towards.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess someone's answered the question. So what are we doing if Poch is still here next season? Difficult one. I think we suffer more, basically. That's the only answer I can give. We suffer more. I don't think we'll be any better. But
I think if he's still here, then it's just about more experience and what the guys can achieve next season. I think if we can get into the Europa League, I think eventually these guys are going to wake up and stop losing semi-finals and finals. So I think I just want a lot of these players with another season of experience under their belt. Not only do we lose the young squad excuse, but I think that hopefully, well, I'm not looking for massive jumps in talent. Massive jumps, but I'm looking for them to just be a bit cuter with what they're doing, because it does seem like we have the opposite of inexperience is not bozo, and I feel like that's what a lot of them have been displaying.
Mirad Semra, how does the fan base view the football club, and which era of another club is it comparable to what Chelsea are going through now? Difficult to compare, because I don't think there's been another football club that's had sanctions and their owner has been stripped of the football club, and they've been forcefully bought out by another set of owners. So I think it's difficult. in terms of, yeah, and it's also difficult because I don't think there's ever been a time where the owners have pumped so much money into a club but also made completely disastrous appointments at the same time. So it's a very unique situation. I think Chelsea has been spending the money. You can argue that the money's not been spent wisely. I'd agree with that sentiment because I don't think that we have needed to revamp the squad as many as some of our fans have believed. But yeah, I don't think there's a comparative really. I just think we are very much a mess of an institution at this moment in time. And I think it didn't need to be this way. But yeah, I think a lot can change with us getting a new manager. But that remains to be seen. These guys still want to stick with Poch, which is worrying. But yeah, it is what it is in that respect. So I've got one more question. Boima Enoch or Kofi. He's that genuine question. What do you think the difference in quality is between Arsenal and Chelsea? So I think I've spoken about this at length. But I'll let you answer first, Jerry, before I close out.
I think the key areas that they have different to us is the decision makers and the guys who are going to take the game in their hands. So almost like you know, Gabriel and Saliba are both solid. They're, rather than, you know, the rest of the team having to hold their hands, they're pushing forward the team. Well, we don't have a strong defensive partnership like that. And then obviously in the attacking areas, you know, Saka, Odegaard. If Saka doesn't do something, then Odegaard, you know, is there. Martinelli on the other occasion also, you know, will pop up something. Gabi Jesus, they've got Trossard. You know, three out of the five players I just mentioned are really good finishers. So it's just, it's not that, you know, the gaps between the different squads are crazy. It's just they have, you know, qualities that we very much lack across the squad.
Yeah, I think from my perspective, I definitely agree with your analysis. I think they've got a lot of stability in their team. I think you can look at an Arsenal side and you know about 80% of the players you know is going to start and play regularly week in, week out. I think they've got partnerships all over the pitch. So they've got Martin Odegaard, Bukayo Saka. They've got Ben White and Saka. They have got Saliba and Gabriel. They've got Saliba, Ben White. So those partnerships and that stability in the team and the combination, and even Gabriel Jesus and Martinelli combine well when they play together. So they've got quite a lot of combinations and quite a lot of stability in their side. And they've also got, like you said, decisive players like Leandro Trossard, Bukayo Saka, Martin Odegaard. Those are players that can make a difference. I think Trossard is an interesting one because Arsenal fans were quite heavy and derided him before he joined. They didn't really want him because they were all big on Modric and saying, Modric is the guy. But I was saying, no, actually, Trossard's a baller. Trossard is cold. So Trossard will infinitely improve your attack because I think he's better than Martinelli. So I think they've got good players. I think they've got really good players. Like you said, they've got decisive ones. I think Trossard is definitely one of a difference maker in terms of his quality, in terms of his finishing. So I think the gap in terms of where Arsenal are, where Chelsea are, is, like you said, decisions at the top. And also just in terms of quality from coaching perspective, I think Arteta has proven himself to be a really good coach, a really flexible coach. So one that is able to impose his will on a team but also respect another an opponent. So he feels like if they are the team that can impose their will and they're generally better, then let's sit back, let's respect ourselves, and let's grind it out, basically. So he's quite flexible in that respect. I respect that, you know what I mean? I think in terms of squad quality, I think there's not much between our squad quality. I think the difference in that respect is, again, stability, partnerships on the team. And Chelsea's team is relatively new. So there's a lot of individual quality, but because of all the chopping and changing, because of the lack of stability in the team and also poor coaching, you're not really going to see it come together well. And I do think if Chelsea were to have a better manager, you're going to see a far, far, far better level of performances from the players. And I think the respect and ratings of said players are going to increase dramatically. Because as it stands, I think a lot of people are underrating the quality of our side. And by and large, they're putting that down to the manager. And I've been down this road before. Like, I've seen players, I've seen fans shit all over our squad under ABB. I've seen them shit all over our squad under Frank Lampard. I've seen them shit all over our squad multiple times. And those players, more often than not, turn into champions. Why? Because they're good players. They're good players. At the very least, serviceable players. And I've said this multiple times, you don't have to have a top squad to win. You don't. You need to have good players and good players that can be coached. And I think Chelsea have got a plethora of good players and even some top players that can be coached. Few and far between, but can be coached. And I don't think it's necessary that, we need to buy a whole new 11 or buy a whole new squad to get back into competing. I think you just need a top manager and allow a top manager to do his work. Pochettino is not a top manager, therefore he should be dismissed. But anyway, I've been Meads. Jerry's been Jerry. We've been Chezziawa. Appreciate your time. Take it easy. Catch you next week. Peace.
Yeah, peace.
Sports Social Podcast Network.